My truth doesn't have to be the same as your truth for us to live in our respective integrities. You know, that's a really important thing that's so necessary for us to start creating the kind of tolerance for each other's diversity that's really necessary in this world, and probably now more than ever.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together, ultimately answering the question, does Hope Still Win? If so, why? And if not, why not? All right, we spent the first part of this year in a series where I had the honor of interviewing incredible guests to see how hope has played a role in their story when life hit them with something unexpected. Loss of a loved one, being given a terminal diagnosis, bankruptcy, and losing someone close to you from suicide. If you haven't tuned in, I highly suggest going back and listening to episodes 29 through 34, because now we're pivoting a little and we're jumping into a new series about how we can find hope and healing. Again, how we can find hope and healing. In today's episode, I sit down with licensed psychologist, highly sought after sex therapist, and founder of Modern Intimacy, Dr. Kate. Dr. Kate is a passionate advocate for mental health and relational and sexual health, which is very, very apparent in our conversation today. I'm telling you, it's interesting to me because, well, my minor, or what I was going after for my minor in college, I can't say I finished it, was sex therapy and sex education. I think it's so important for us to talk about. It's so relevant for so many, no matter where we're at in life. So I think you're going to enjoy this conversation today on Hope Still Wins. Here it is with Dr. Kate. Dr. Kate, thank you so much for joining Hope Still Wins today.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Now, I was just sharing a little bit with you about this, but sex is something very, very interesting to me and important to me. In college, I learned a lot from my classes. I took classes pursuing a sexual education. My dream, Dr. Kate, was to teach sex ed in churches.
Oh, wow.
That was my dream because it was something important to me. And I felt like it wasn't being done fairly. And so today is just a big conversation with me. I'm super excited for it.
Well, I'm excited to talk with you about that, especially, you know, in understanding your background. I think there's a lot we can go over.
Now, to get started here, you know, I just gave the intro to you, but if you don't mind just giving us from your own personal voice, who you are, what you're into, what you're about, and then we'll get started.
Sure. Thanks. So my name is Dr. Kate Balestrieri. I'm a licensed psychologist, clinical and forensic. I'm a certified sex therapist, a certified sex addiction therapist, and I'm trained in what's called the PACT model of couples therapy, which is all about helping couples stay regulated and aligned together.
So today, obviously, this podcast, you know, the title kind of sells it, Hope Still Wins.
yeah.
And we're kind of going through a series right now. We're talking a lot about people's deepest pains and maybe their turning points in life that have caused them to switch gears or kind of shaken life up a bit. But we're also at the same time talking about what it means to heal from those pains and learning what that looks like. And so I kind of want to start here around the topic of, you know, sexual abuse, sexual exploitation. And I want to ask you, how often, first off, do you deal with people and help people heal through those circumstances?
Yeah. If I might, I just want to offer some different language. Instead of deal with people, I might want to say work with, because when people have been sexually abused or exploited, often they feel like a burden, and they feel like something is weighing on them, like they have now brought something into the world that really isn't theirs to carry, frankly. So I just want to put that out there just in case anyone has ever felt like, oh man, someone's going to have to deal with this with me. Like this is not a burden for people who work in this field and who want to help survivors. So it's something that I help people with quite frequently. A good majority of the folks on my caseload have had some kind of overt or covert sexual trauma. And a lot of what they are trying to do in their work with me is unpack the impact that it's had on them and really think about how can they move from a position of having this wound in their sexuality to a position of feeling okay, first and foremost. And then once they feel calibrated in that sense of okay or peace or assimilation, moving into a place of thriving again in their sex lives.
And thanks for correcting me there. I definitely understand from talking to many people through this podcast, even about where they've been and where they're trying to go. And so thanks for the correction there. I just have a pretty broad question to ask you here. Why is it that sex is so powerful though? Like, why is it then people do feel like, oh no, somebody's gonna have to deal with me instead of this, hey, this is a part of life. And now somebody gets to work alongside of me to heal and to recover and to understand how great I am amongst this situation. Mm-hmm. Why is it that sex feels like it has that shame attached to it?
Sex in general or sexual trauma or both?
Sexual trauma.
Yeah. Well, I think first we have to look at the relationship that culturally we have with sex as a collective. And it's an interesting paradox because in so many ways, sex is commoditized, it's commodified, it's talked about a lot, and it's used in really in-your-face ways in terms of marketing campaigns and just in the world in general. So we see a lot of sexualized material and content, but then we're often given a message that sex is something to be ashamed of or to be done behind closed doors. Don't talk about it. Don't flaunt it. Keep it to a minimum. And that's especially true for people who identify as women. There's often a significant added layer of shame and silence that comes with being sexual if you were raised as a woman. So I think when you think about that relationship, just in general, when you add the layer of trauma onto that landscape, this is something that typically creates a lot of fear, a lot of added shame. You know, I've been hurt, something happened to me, and I've been violated in a way that, you know, says something about me because of the messaging that we have about the overconflation of sex and personal worth, right? So when we have a culture that says sex either adds to who you are or takes away from who you are based on your gender, or other variables about you, when something happens to us that's out of our volition, out of our control, that also can add a lot of layers of, uh-oh, I should have done something different to prevent that. Now, I'm saying that not because I believe we should hold victims responsible for what they've been through, but that's often the messaging that they internalize. I could have prevented this. I should have prevented this if only I had done this. And that unfortunate messaging is the result of many, many generations of people holding survivors accountable instead of looking at the behaviors of perpetrators.
But I also have to say too, and correct me or explain to me if you can, you know, I have a lot of friends who have grown up in places where, you know, sex maybe isn't even talked about, or it's this thing that you can never discuss. It's taboo. Right. It's foreign. It's also shameful. And then they make the choice. They make the choice themselves to have sex with their partner or with somebody. And then they walk away from that and they feel a tremendous amount of shame and guilt because of the messaging. What would you say to those people? And we're going to get to the religious side of this, to the faith-based side of this, where, you know, what churches are telling people and that. But I want to know from a secular side right now, what does that do for a human when, you know, they have chosen, yet now they still feel the shame?
Well, I think what that really presents to them is a bit of an existential crisis between their birthright as a human being to have an organic and natural, healthy, vibrant relationship with sex, and messages that they may have internalized from a religious or cultural set of values that say otherwise. Right? So people experience a lot of conflicting messages between what is biologically present for all of us as humans in terms of sexual potential and opportunity and play and joy and creativity. And then typically a very rigid set of expectations around here are the only ways in which you're allowed to access this. So if you choose to be sexual in ways that fall outside of these very narrow windows of permission, then that means somehow that there's something wrong with who you are as a person, right? There are a lot of overlays again and conflations of personal worth, goodness or sinfulness that come with the messages that we have about whether we are or are not sexual, depending on our religious, cultural, and, you know, other societal explicit and implicit messages that we receive. So biologically and from a secular basis, we are born with a relationship with sex that is okay. Right? Like Mama Nature just said, yeah, you get to be sexual and you get to enjoy it. And you can do it for this reason or that reason or this reason or that reason. And it's okay. It wasn't until humans got their big, sophisticated and unsophisticated, messy brains involved that we started putting limitations on it.
So let's dive into that for a second. And then we're going to talk later in the podcast about healing and coming through all of this. But let's talk about you've stated that you maintain a secular view, a sex positive view on sexual education. Do you mind explaining that for all the listeners? Because, you know, we have a wide array of listeners. This is the podcast that was hoped to have, you know, a lot of different faiths kind of represented. And so what does that mean?
A sex positive view on the world and on sexuality in general, from my perspective, really consists of, first of all, understanding sexuality and educating yourselves on it or yourself on it in terms of like, what do anatomy consist of and how do you actually pleasure somebody with this anatomy or that anatomy? How do you pleasure yourself? So being curious about sexuality. But really what sex positivity is about is being open to whatever is your organic sexual truth without judgment. So if you have fantasies about this, for example, or that, just saying, oh, that's something that I'm curious about, and not condemning yourself, because it's a recognition that sex is about adult play, right? And it's one of the spaces where adults get to be creative and get to indulge in fantasy without it really meaning anything about who they are as human beings. Sex gives us the ability to express different parts of ourselves. And that's important in our adulthood because we're all dimensional human beings. So sex positivity is about not having shame for whatever it is we might be interested in exploring or engaging in sexually. And it's also about not shaming other people where their interests may align or not align with ours. And it's about recognizing that the values that we maintain can work for us and be awesome and valid and great. And that's the integrity in which you want to live. But it doesn't mean that it has to define everyone else's relationship with sex. And I think that's a place where we've gotten really dicey as humans. We've gotten very judgy, like, this is what my group says is right, so everything else is wrong and all you people who do it are wrong. And I think that's really dangerous because everyone's belief systems are important to them. So sex positivity says, okay, what works for me may not work for someone else, and I don't have to shame them, control them, ridicule them, or think poorly of them. I just get to acknowledge that sexuality is diverse because humans are diverse. And that's sort of the end of it. I can pick and choose what works for me and leave the rest on the table.
So for somebody listening, who does have that, you know, right now in their gut, they're like, yeah, but that's not what I've been taught. It is not what my church is telling me. I want to make sure that people are living a sinless life, and there is parameters to that. So what would you say to those people?
I mean, with compassion and love and respect, I would say stay in your own lane. You know, worry about what you're doing with your body and in your relationships and in your immediate community in terms of the people who share those beliefs with you. Don't worry so much about what other people are doing. They will answer to that when it's their time to answer for that, if there is an answer to be given, right? And we have to be really careful as humans not to be so egocentric that we think our one way is the only way of being. And sometimes we do get very egocentric because we are raised with these beliefs that we hold as truths for us, right? But my truth doesn't have to be the same as your truth for us to live in our respective integrities and go about our daily lives. And I think, you know, that's a really important thing that's so necessary for us to start creating the kind of, tolerance for each other's diversity that's really necessary in this world, and probably now more than ever.
We have a new partner I'm excited to tell you about. It's a product I use every day. I'm started taking Athletic Greens because I had this counter full of supplements and vitamins. And honestly, I just couldn't travel with them. I also would find myself forgetting to take them. It was inconvenient. And so I started taking Athletic Greens because it's super simple. But let me tell you what this stuff is. With one scoop, one really delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day off right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. When I'm home, I take one scoop in the morning with water before my workout, and it's the perfect boost of energy. And even when I'm traveling and I may not be able to get my workout in until later in the day, it's the fuel I need to start my day and gives me the confidence that I can continue my healthy lifestyle whenever I'm traveling this year. Again, it's a game changer. So for me, I believe it has been a great thing. I believe it would be for you too. If you're not convinced yet, here are a few reasons why I love Athletic Greens. It supports better quality sleep and recovery. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, while still tasting so good. Here's a big deal for me. It supports mental clarity and alertness. And finally, you can get it. It costs less than $3 per day. I don't know what supplements you're taking, but I can guess $3 per day has to be cheaper than getting all the different supplements I used to have. All right. Are you convinced now? I hope so. It's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. Just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/HSW. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/HSW to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So, you know, it's very public, not ideally, I guess. Well, I guess it's our own mistake. But, you know, my wife and I got married in November. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And through our dating and through meeting each other, we decided to stay abstinent until we got married. So you're not telling my wife and I that we're crazy. You're saying, hey, that's good for you. That was the value that you chose.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, there are many people who would uphold that value for themselves, and it's important to them for different reasons, sometimes spiritual or religious, sometimes for other reasons. And they get to make that choice for themselves because they're talking about it together and their values align, and like, amazing. That's great.
So then what have you seen in your work when somebody does step outside their lane? What kind of trauma can ensue? You know, I've had, even within that decision that my wife and I made, in the comments about that, there was hurt and there was pain and there was deep, there was criticism and confusion. And we knew why we were doing it, right? That was our decision. It was not strictly a faith-based decision, even though we do hold ourselves to we try to hold ourselves to a high standard. But that was not always my decision in life, and that's very public, also. But this was something we made as a couple, and even the criticism of that hurt us and made us spend many of nights at dinner talking about what are we making here? What are we doing? So, can you explain a little bit now if we can move from the education side of this to also the trauma side of this, and then how does healing exist within this?
Yeah. So if I understand your question is, when people start focusing on the sex lives of other people, what's the trauma inherent in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I think it comes down to a few things. And one of those things is this conflation of sex and worth. And so as a culture, there are so many people who have overcoupled somebody's value as a human with their choices sexually. And I think that we are going through a bit of a collective crisis of identity and of value, if you will, because we are experiencing a lot of polarities of opinion. And so what that can bring about from a group dynamic and a collective perspective is a lot of existential fear around, where do I belong? Am I safe? Do I matter? And when people have an overconflation of sexuality and worth as a human being, I think then judging other people for their sexual choices gives people an artificial platform upon which to feel more empowered in their own decision, where they may feel like they have less power in their lives. It also gives them an artificial platform upon which to feel more righteous, more good, more worthy. And if you're afraid of kind of where you stand in life or where you stand in the afterlife, it's really important to have a more inflated sense of security and feeling all right on your path. So I think that's a part of it. And it's a very unconscious dynamic that most of us have. Also, as human beings, from like a resources perspective, we're pretty good about making sure that the group of people that we belong to get the resources that we need to survive. So unconsciously, we'll pick teams all the time, right? My group will get these resources because we believe in these things, and this is who I belong to, and this is where I stay safe. So we find ways to other people. And sometimes that happens when we look at sexuality. Well, those people do those things, so they're not part of our group. So that means all the love and all the good stuff that we're holding on to is just reserved for us over here. We're going to keep other people away from this pile of resources and needs that are being met. We're going to keep them away and preserve what is ours. It's a very early primitive psychological adaptation that humans developed. And when we get really unsure of who we are, where we fit, what it means, what we have access to, a lot of those primitive defenses come up and we start othering and going into smaller and more secure groups.
So then let's talk about the people that have been pushed aside.
Sure.
Who feel like the outsider looking in. You know, they have now felt like that. They believe that about themselves. There's tons of people listening. I know it. We get the messages of people who, you know, when my book came out in February of last year, people wrote a lot about their experiences with sex outside and within the church, just with people, pushing them aside. And so those people are hurting. What would you say to them? What is the start here to them to start to heal and to start to move back in to feel and know that they're a part of something powerful and they're not on the outside?
Well, they might be on the outside, right? One of the ways in which sex has become weaponized in our culture is to create this, you can stay with us if you adhere to these values or you have to leave mentality. And that's a very powerful mechanism of control. So for some people, they may have been ostracized from their families or from their religious group or from their community if they've chosen a lifestyle that includes sexual activities that are outside of the values of their main group. So I don't want to invalidate that or say that there's a clear path back in, because it presents a pretty uncomfortable double bind where someone has to choose between their own authentic truth or inclusion in a group of people who they love or want to belong with, right? And that is an existential nightmare to think about. How do I do that? Am I true to myself, or do I abandon myself in order to have these relationships? And that is a pretty gnarly pain that many people experience when they start to deconstruct what they've learned or ask questions about why these truths, these particular set of truths, whatever they may be, are the truths that we believe in, right? So it can be really scary, and it can cause big relational ruptures with family members or with communities. It can actually lead to them not having support with childcare or financial support or educational support. They may lose friends. They may, disconnect from that part of themselves that feels sexually alive and okay, because now it is something that's brought them pain. So it can create this internalized trauma that makes it difficult for people to really robustly enjoy their relationship with sex again.
But at the same time, community is so important to who we are as humans. And yes. So there has to be a community somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You know, we people can't say, you know, when we say the outside, you're not the outside of everything. Like, you might be the outside of some, but you can't be the outside of everything, because community is so, important. So where then do they start to find that community again? Where do they start to find that belonging again? Because it has to be somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that really is where the healing begins, right? Is where you create a new community, you find a new community, and you align with people whose values match yours and whose way of living in the world is meaningful and aligned with yours. But it doesn't always take away the sting of losing the relationships or the group that you were cast out of. So it can be both a grief and a healing that span somebody's whole life, depending on how they, you know, how they experience that.
So I just imagine that somebody's listening right now going, yeah, I, this is all true. Like, nobody, I don't know if anybody can disagree that there's going to be decisions that we make in our life that could push us away from close relationships. That's going to happen, right? So how do we weigh that it's worth it? Like, how do we know and make this decision that it's actually something that is worth pursuing, and that we don't just not do it? We say no to it.
I wish I had an easy answer for you. I think it's something that so many people struggle with and sit with for a long time before they have enough information to make one step forward in either direction, right? And sometimes they'll take a step forward in this direction and realize, oh, that's scary, or actually I don't want that. And they'll step back and recalibrate for a while. And then they may go back into the other path that they were on and realize, okay, this is good, but actually, no, it doesn't quite feel right. So I need to step back and recalibrate. So people can sit in that that ambiguity and that ambivalence for a long time before they feel comfortable exercising a direction. And, you know, it usually does come down to how quickly they can develop support and new community if they're dependent financially or, on their initial group for resources, how quickly they can reestablish those resources somewhere else. I mean, it can be scary to be all the way on your own in the world. So I think when people have adequate scaffolding, it makes that leap a little easier. Some people don't care. They take the leap and they're like, I'll figure it out when I get to the other side. Mm-hmm. And some people say, I'm not willing to make that risk. I think it's a really personal choice.
There's very few decisions in life that feel binary. This is definitely not one of them. This is definitely not one of them. But at the same time, I would have to imagine, Dr. Kate, that this causes an existential crisis as well. Like it as does. Much as you were saying before, that the crisis of, I don't know what to, you know, how to reestablish relationships. I don't know where mm-hmm. I stand in this, where that crisis lives. This is, mm-hmm. this at the same time is causing you to spin and swirl and go, I don't know where I belong. And so we go back to that question of where does the healing start? Where can we start to find healing?
Yeah. Great question. I think before I even answer that, one other thing that comes to mind is that sometimes this can even bring about a crisis of faith, right? Why would my creator put me in such a double bind?
Why?
Yeah. I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I think it depends on the kind of creator that you imagine you're in relationship with, right? Some people are in relationship with a very demanding, critical, conditional God. Some people are in relationship with a very loving, forgiving, open-hearted God. I think, you know, how someone answers that question depends on what kind of God they imagine put them in this position in the first place. But also, I think it can make people very angry with God, if that is how they identify a higher power. It can make them question their faith. It can make them even leave their faith. Yeah. For some folks, it makes them more solidified in their faith once they reconcile that question, if they ever do. But it's part of the unknown that can come with, you know, something as seemingly benign as sex, right? There's so many dimensions that are connected to it.
Hey everybody, it's Ben here. I just want to tell you about Generous. Generous Coffee Company is a company my buddies and I started a few years ago with one simple purpose, to provide the highest quality coffee. So when you hear people talking about, oh my gosh, that's the best coffee I've ever had, well, Generous would fall into that category, specialty grade coffee. And then 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. We also have apparel and coffee mugs, but our coffee is really what drives us. So today, go visit us on Instagram at generous_coffee, or please, please go visit our website, generouscoffee.com. You can buy some coffee for yourself, for your business, for your school, for your church, for your family. It's a great gift, and we love to provide it to you. So please go out there today, buy some coffee. We look forward to having you as our guest and our client. It would be such a cool partnership, and I would love to hear what you think. So please review us online. Again, that's generouscoffee.com. 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. One of the things that is a theme that is so important for everybody here is that, you know, these questions are good questions to ask yourself, right? Mm. You have the education. Hopefully you get the education on the vast array at which sex is a part of our lives and a part of our being and a part of our biology. Then you make that decision on a value basis on what your values align with that. And you make that decision because that is who you are in your journey. And that's great. And that's okay. Yeah. But also within all of this, there is still that question that I want to get to with you is there's been so much pain. There's so much pain. I mean, look around us today, right? It's a crisis of faith at times. And that hurts my heart from somebody that wanted to do this in the churches so that people had the education, they could make the decision and they would feel loved and accepted and hopefully welcomed or at least open to talk about it. But there's been people now who have left their faith, left the God that they believed in and they loved so wholeheartedly because of decisions they've made. And so how do we then tell those people, hey, like you, there is healing here, or there is an option here. There's a door open for you. I know that this might still come back to what we said before, but like you're not the outsider. Like you might feel like it, and you might feel like everybody in your life has walked away from you. But it doesn't mean your God has. It doesn't mean that everybody has.
Exactly.
And so what do we say to those people? Because that's really what I want to get to.
Well, I think that's such a beautiful question and an invitation for somebody who might be sitting in this struggle right now. And I think, again, there's no like one cookie cutter answer for everyone. But what comes to mind for me is that regardless of what your faith is, there's typically some kind of room for the path of free will. And what that means to me is that we get to create a life that is meaningful, and we get to envision a relationship with a higher power or with spirituality in general that can create comfort. It may not take the same shape and form of the story that you were told when you grew up, but you get to redefine it and you get to cultivate a relationship with something bigger than you that feels nurturing, that feels rewarding. And that is a guiding post, I think, that can help people move through their life, even if it looks different than, you know, the religion in which they were raised or the set of values in which they were raised.
The one thing I never believe is healthy, Dr. Kate, is chaos. And I think so often in people's stories of sex and their ideas of sex, chaos is so much behind it, because maybe there hasn't been the education. Maybe they've never talked to anybody about it. Maybe they've explored it and never ever opened up about it. Never talked to friends, family, anybody about it. And so chaos ensues, and unhealthiness, I feel like, always comes from a place of chaos. And so when we start to talk about it, when we start to find that group, something good happens. Hopefully something loving happens, something welcoming and accepting. And your work is doing that. And so, you know, people are listening to you right now and they're going, hey, I would like to talk to her. I have something that I would not talk to my friends and family about. I don't feel comfortable doing that, but I would love to talk to Dr. Kate about it. She seems like she knows what she's talking about. Are you taking clients right now? And if so, how can they get a hold of you? And if not, where could they turn?
So I've got a really robust team of clinicians who work with me under the umbrella of my practice called Modern Intimacy. And we do have space to take on some new clients. And we have presence in California, Colorado, Illinois, Florida, and New York State. So, you know, we can work with people across a wide range of geographies, and they can find us at our website, modernintimacy.com.
And if I did the research correctly, you also are the host, or you're a part of the Modern Intimacy podcast, correct?
Yes, I'm the host of that.
Yeah, so they can tune in and listen to that.
Thank you.
As a good first step, or maybe as a good step, just to start to hear from people like you. And I'm sure it covers a wide array of topics. I'm excited to tune in. I've never listened. I'm sorry about that. I just found out about it through interviewing you, but I am excited to tune in because this is something I feel like so vital. And to be vulnerable for a second, I have so many people in my life who have walked away from the faith because of stuff like this. They haven't walked away from Jesus always, because that's the faith that I've come from, that I'm within. Okay. And so I'm most familiar with people who have been followers of Jesus, but they've walked away because they feel pushed aside. And it's, to me, it's heartbreaking. Because there's so much more.
I'm so sorry to hear that, and want to just echo how heartbreaking that can really be. And also, I want to highlight the hope that I heard in what you said too. Sometimes we need to leave the structure of something, but we get to hold on to the heart of it. And so I think that's a really important path through some of this pain, is maybe it is around leaving this organization of religious ideas, but maintaining your connection to God and finding a different way to express that. And I think that can be really powerful.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you for doing this. It means a lot. Yeah. Again, it's Modern Intimacy Podcast. Also, you can visit Dr. Kate on the website and check in. She has a wide array of clinicians who would love to talk to you, I'm sure. And if you're out there and you're just like, I just need to talk to somebody, I think this is a great resource. And so thank you for sharing it. And Dr. Kate, thanks for coming on Hope Still Wins. Now, our final question that we ask everybody, not one person has gotten away from this podcast without it being asked. And answer it however you'd like. But okay. Do you believe, Dr. Kate, that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Oh, I absolutely do. Yeah. I think that we are the curators of our future in many ways. And what we can control is our internal experience to a significant degree. So hope wins because we get to cultivate it. And that's something that's always at our disposal. And it may seem hard sometimes, it may seem out of reach. And when we start developing a practice that looks for hopeful moments, then hope becomes a lot more visible in the not so obvious places. And pretty soon it starts becoming automatic.
It's beautiful. Dr. Kate, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. This was such a lovely conversation, and I really appreciate all of the thoughtful questions around this topic.
Thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. All right, that's it for today, my friends. Make sure to check out Dr. Kate's company, Modern Intimacy, and follow her both on her company and on her Instagram. We'll provide all the links here in today's show notes, so check them out. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and I cannot wait to talk to you next week.